ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्री गार्ग उवाच याधूनाम् अहमाचार्या ख्यातश्च भुवि सर्वथा सुतां मया संस्कृतं ते मन्यते देवकी सुतं श्री गार्ग मुनि सेड My dear Nanda Maharaj, I am the priestly guide, the Acharya, of the Yadu dynasty. This is known everywhere. Therefore, if I perform the purificatory process for your sons, Kamsa will consider them the sons of Devaki. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Garga Muni indirectly disclosed that Krishna was the son of Devaki, not of Yashoda. Since Kamsa was already searching for Krishna, if the purificatory process were undertaken by Garga Muni, Kamsa might be informed, and that would create a catastrophe. It might be argued that although Garga Muni was the priest of the Yadu dynasty, Nanda Maharaj also belonged to that dynasty. Nanda Maharaj, however, was not acting as a Kshatriya. Therefore, Garga Muni said, if I act as your priest, this will confirm that Krishna is the son of Devaki. Thavacha nako dhundbe devakya astamo garbho nastri bhavitam arhati iti sinchantayan trutva devakya darikavacha pihanta katha sankhas thari thano nayo bhave Kamsa is both a great diplomat and a very sinful man. Therefore, having heard from Yogamaya, the daughter of Devaki, that the child who will kill him has already been born somewhere else, having heard that the eighth pregnancy of Devaki could not bring forth a female child, and having understood your friendship with Vasudev, Kamsa, upon hearing that the purificatory process has been performed by me, the priest of the Yadu dynasty, may certainly consider all these points and suspect that Krishna is the son of Devaki and Vasudev, then he may take steps to kill Krishna, and that would be a catastrophe. Purport of Srila Prabhupada. Kamsa knew very well that Yogamaya was, after all, the maidservant of Krishna and Vishnu. And although Yogamaya had appeared as the daughter of Devaki, she might have forbidden to disclose this fact. Actually, this was what had happened. Garga Muni argued very soberly that his taking part in performing the pure reformatory process for Krishna would give rise to many doubts, so that Kamsa might take very severe steps to kill the child. Kamsa had already sent many demons to attempt to kill this child, but none of them had survived. If Garga Muni were to perform the purificatory process, Kamsa's suspicions would be fully confirmed, and he would take very severe steps. Garga Muni gave this warning to Nanda Maharaj. the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as described by the father of Sri Vyasadeva. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashashya. He possesses all six opulences in full, which includes complete strength. All strength possessed by all living beings, as well as all the strength possessed by all the powers of nature. They are all simply infinitesimal extensions of the supreme strength emanating from Krishna. Janmadyashayata, that everything is emanating from Krishna. When we see a powerful person in this world, we become very impressed. We become very attractive. But compared to the powers of nature, what is the strength of any human being in this world? When there is earthquakes, when there is cyclones, when there is tornadoes, when there is tidal waves, these are very, very small gestures to show the strength of material nature. And who can overcome them? Just like recently there was an earthquake in the Soviet Union. At that time, the Soviet Union was one of the two most powerful countries in all the world, with all their nuclear bombs and everything. But when the earthquake came and hundreds and thousands of people were immediately killed, what could anyone do? The power of nature is far more than any man, or even all mankind. And in America, the wealthiest state in all of America is California. There are more millionaires in California than any other concentrated place in all of the world. Money is power in this world. And yet there is a line, some flaw in the earth, as they call it. And it is known as a fact that where that crack is in the earth, there must be an earthquake. And when that earthquake comes, it is predicted not only by the geologists and all the scientists, but even by astrologers, everyone, that when this earthquake comes, it will be so severe that the entire state of California will fall into the ocean and be utterly destroyed. And it's way overdue. And the longer overdue, the worse it will be, because it's getting deeper and deeper and deeper toward the center of the earth. So what can they do about it? With all of their money and all of their power and all of their fame, what can they do about it? If the earthquake comes, they all die. It is as simple as that. This is just an insignificant token of the power of nature. What to speak of how we read of the destruction at the end of a kalpa, or at the end of the day of Brahma? It is described in the Bhagavatam, in the Puranas, how the sun becomes so hot that it completely just burns everything. There's massive fires. And then there's deluges of rain, which completely, utterly covers the whole face of the earth. Not only the face of the earth, but all the lower and middle planets in utter devastation. this earth becomes nothing but one massive ocean. So after burning fire burns everything to ashes, then everything is utterly drowned in not just a little water, but thousands of miles deep of water. And what man could possibly sustain this? It's utter devastation. So this is also, Krishna says, Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharachara, that I am the controller of this material nature. Material nature is Krishna's nature. This is only, Krishna says, all great and opulent things that you see in this world are only but one spark of my splendor. So the power of nature is an opulence. It is only one spark of the splendor of Krishna. And similarly, Krishna, in a personal way, when he wants to reveal his strength, how he appeared as Lord Narasimhadev to destroy even that demon Hiranyakashipu who conquered the entire universe, who even conquered Indra. He appeared as Sri Ramchandra to pierce the heart of Ravana and cause him to fall to the ground dead, vomiting blood. He appeared as Vamanadev, where he expanded his body to such massive proportions that he was able to cover the entire universe with two steps from his lotus feet. And yet the same supreme reservoir of all power, of all strength, he is appearing as a baby child in such a way that all of his loving devotees are worrying about him. They're in great anxiety, making all sorts of secret plans how to protect him from a human being, Rakshasa. Huh? This is Krishna's Leela. The supreme reservoir of all power and strength. He's appearing like such a helpless child that Nanda Maharaj and Garga Muni, who are both his pure unalloyed devotees, they are having very, very serious discussion of how to protect this child. Garga Muni is explaining that I am the priest of the Yadu dynasty, and there's really no reason for me to be here to give a name-giving ceremony to your children. I am generally dealing with the very, very exalted kshatriyas of Mathura. But Vasudev has sent me. Vasudev indicated to Garga Muni that his own son was at the place of Nanda Maharaj. And Vasudev was so much concerned with Krishna. His love and his heart was so much with this baby Krishna. Although he took the child across the Jamuna and put him in the care of Nanda Maharaj and the order of Krishna, his mind was thinking in such devotion how I could give the best to my child. Vasudeva was so selfless. He recognized the fact that he may never see this child. He has no power to enjoy the beauty or the leela of this child. He was utterly in a selfless condition. He wasn't thinking, what will I get from this child? He was only thinking, what can I give? Most parents, they want to enjoy seeing their children raised. They want to enjoy all the wonderful experiences of hearing the child learn how to talk, seeing the child learn how to walk, and all of these things. It's a pleasure. That's why people have children.
So we give so much to the child, but at the same time we are expecting so much joy and pleasure to come from it. Therefore, our relationship with our child is motivated to our own sense gratification. If my child gets good grades, not only will my child do nice, but I will enjoy very much. And my child will give me nice prestige. And people will be attracted to my child. So naturally they will be attracted to me. But Vasudev, he understood that he was in prison. He was not even allowed to tell anybody in all the world that this was his child. Because if he did, the child would be killed. That was his thinking. And therefore, he knew, I may never see him, I may never enjoy his beauty, I may never enjoy his lila. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they will enjoy all these things. But I love this child so dearly that according to my capacity, wherever I am, I simply want to do what is best for him. This is unalloyed love. Simply in the level of giving without expecting anything in return. In fact, all he's getting in return is problems. It's because of this child that he's in jail. If it wasn't for this child being predicted to be born, he would not have been in prison at all. He could have been enjoying his beautiful palace in Mathura. He was in a very royal position. He didn't have to see. He could have seen his wife in fine jewels and dresses and enjoying the high life of Mathura. But instead, he's watching his wife living in a jail cell without any freedom. Seeing her own children being massacred, killed right before her eyes. Such a terrible condition. And it was all because of this one child. From the physical point of view, he was getting no pleasures or joys. He was only getting sufferings and miseries from this child. Yet, his great hope and his great meditation was simply, how could I protect him? How could I please him? How could I show my love for him? This is unmotivated, unalloyed devotion. Vasudev is teaching us such an exalted example of what a devotee is. Savai pong sang paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahoita ki aprati hata jajatma suprasidati. This means that the supreme occupation is that which brings one to the loving service of the Lord. And such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy Krishna and to completely satisfy the self. So such unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service Vasudev possessed. Let everyone else enjoy Krishna. Let me suffer for the rest of my life, if that's what is required, for Krishna. But let my only goal be to please him, to serve him, to protect him, to help him. That is Vasudev. So, it was Vasudev that contacted Gargamuni and told him that unless the samskara is performed for this boy, then it will not be auspicious for him. So somehow or other you must go and perform this samskara. He's living at the house of Nanda Maharaj. He's actually my son. So Gargamuni went. And he was warning Nanda Maharaj that, Nanda Maharaj, you know that Kamsa is looking for this child everywhere. According to astrological calculations, according to the prophecy that came from the sky, the eighth child of Devaki could not have been a female. It had to be a man, a boy.
And therefore, and when Yoga Maya appeared before Kamsa, she even told him to his face that the eighth son of Devaki and Vasudeva is already somewhere else and he will kill you. So now he's looking, he's hunting everywhere. In fact, he is already suspicious. He has already sent Putana. He has already sent Sankata Asura. He has already sent Putana. And he knows that they've all been killed by Krishna. So he's very suspicious already. And if he finds out that I have performed the name-giving ceremony, then he will know for sure, as irrefutable confirmation, that this is the child of Devaki and Vasudev. And we want to protect this child. After all, how he's killing these demons and everything. Gargamuni knew. But still, he had this loving affection. I must warn you, Nanda Maharaj. So Nanda Maharaj, he is here considering the words of Sri Gargacharya. And this is really a beautiful display of what love of Krishna really is. In this Leela, we find Vasudev, who is so selflessly always concerned only with Krishna's pleasure and welfare. And we find Nanda and Gargamuni, how they're just worrying like anything for Krishna. How they're so much concerned for Krishna. And this is why Krishna puts himself in such positions, to increase the love of his devotees. If he revealed himself as the Almighty Narayan, what sort of loving affections could they have with him? Only Om Namo Narayan, with love. But the intensity and the intimacy of the affection of Vasudev, Nanda, and Gargamuni exhibited here is way, way beyond that. Huh? And therefore, Krishna appears to put himself in a very, very, very helpless position only to increase the faith and the devotion of his servants. Only to increase the quality of the love. And, of course, those exalted Vaishnavas who come to this world, they are manifestations of Krishna in the sense that they are revealing to the world the mercy of Krishna. They are teaching the world how to love Krishna. And really, it is Krishna through these great souls that is teaching the world how to love himself. A real sadhu doesn't speak his own mind. He doesn't teach his own ideas. Krishna is doing everything through him. Krishna is speaking through him. Krishna is instructing people through his example. Krishna shows the world through his devotee how to love him and how to serve him. How to attract our minds to him. Therefore, Guru is representative of God. And Krishna often puts Guru in the same types of situations. I remember for so many years when Srila Prabhupada would come to where the devotees were, often we would have the great fortune of meeting him in India, in New York, at New Vrindavan. And such a joyous occasion it was.
for us to sit at his lotus feet, to hear him speak, to hear him chanting, to see his example, to experience his infinite love. We cannot even attempt to explain the great mercy showered upon us and the feelings and the realizations of our indebtedness to him whenever we would be in his physical presence. This was his lila, to attract our hearts, to attract our minds by coming before us in this way. But on many occasions, there was an even more intensified experience when his health would be in critical condition. Several times, message came to every temple in ISKCON that Srila Prabhupada is in very critical condition. He's immobilized due to his old age, and we do not know whether he will live or not live. He is requesting everyone to pray to Krishna that, my dear Lord Krishna, if you desire, allow Srila Prabhupada to be with us and have 24-hour kirtan. At that time, although Prabhupada was not there present, sometimes he was in India, sometimes he was in Los Angeles. This happened on several occasions where we would get these urgent, urgent messages. And the devotees, I was at New Vrindavan at the time, but the same feeling was everywhere, in all 108 temples throughout the world. The devotees would stay up throughout the night, practically everyone, just having kirtan, with a big, big picture of Prabhupada on the Vyasasan, just sitting in front of the Vyasasan, just having kirtan and praying and praying and praying. And while we'd be praying, while we would be having kirtan, it was such an intense anxiety in our minds that he might leave us. It was so painful to our hearts, just the thought to live in this world without our Guru Maharaj. It was just tearing our minds and our hearts in billions of pieces. We couldn't imagine it. All we knew was Srila Prabhupada's guidance. So devotees were crying and praying and chanting. But we had to chant Prabhupada's prayer, if you desire Krishna. We could not demand Krishna, but we could only make our plea that if you desire, please allow him to remain with us. And factually, how those wonderful circumstances brought the community together. Because when such circumstances took place, all ego problems between devotees, they were so insignificant, they were forgotten. All personality conflicts, they were just as if they never had ever existed. Our hearts were on fire. And appreciation for Prabhupada, gratefulness to Prabhupada, the understanding of how serious our vows are to our spiritual master, were stronger than ever. And then Prabhupada would get better. But actually, it was us that got better. It wasn't Prabhupada that got better. It was us that got better. We became better devotees and better disciples. Our love, our affection, our feelings were increased, our gratitude. So in this way, Prabhupada used to tell us that Krishna that Krishna puts the guru through these circumstances for several reasons. One is because the guru has to take on the karma of the disciples. It has to go somewhere. So one token part of it, the guru accepts upon himself his love by the arrangement of Sri Krishna. And two is to increase the love and the service of the disciples. Krishna puts guru through the situation. So in this way, just as Vasudev and Gargamuni, they are worrying so much because Krishna is in such a precarious position. And Krishna takes that precarious position to increase their love and affection. Similarly, he puts his spiritual master, his devotee, in the same situation to increase the love and affection of the followers. So Krishna purposely puts his devotees in this situation, but Krishna purposely puts himself in the same situation. So this is how we must understand that Krishna is the supreme controller and everything he does is perfect and complete. And if we recognize how and why Krishna is doing this, then we are most fortunate. Krishna does not want us to be cold-hearted. Krishna does not want us to think, oh, this is happening to Gurudev. Well, everything's perfect and complete. Why should I be in any anxiety? It's perfect and complete to put you in anxiety. Nanda and Gargamuni, you think that they're in Maya because they're worrying about Krishna? They're worrying about him. Gargamuni's warning Nanda, and Nanda's worried. Let's do it secretly. Nobody will know. Not even my closest relatives will know. Only Jashoda myself. Nobody else will know anything about this namakaran, this name-giving ceremony, this samskara. They were worrying. But it was perfect and complete because it increased their love. It increased their devotion. So similarly, we should learn how to see Krishna's perfect and complete plan. That Guru is willing to suffer like anything by the arrangement of Krishna just to increase our love for him. And Krishna is perfectly arranging just the situation to give us the opportunity to increase our love. But if we take it cold-heartedly, Krishna's perfect, it doesn't matter. Then what happens? No benefit. No increase of love, no increase of attachment, no increase of gratitude. Yes, it is happening under Krishna's control. It is perfect for this reason. To help us recognize our indebtedness, our need for the mercy of Sri Gurudev. And for that matter, for the great Vaishnavas. Learning how to appreciate the glories of the Vaishnavas increases our service attitude like anything. Increases our love. Love shown to a devotee is love shown to Krishna. Shariya Vaishnava Seva Nistarakai. Narottam Das Thakur has said, without serving a great Vaishnava, one cannot ever approach Krishna. Our love for the Vaishnavas is our love for Krishna. So just as Gargamuni and Nanda Maharaj were so much worried and concerned for Krishna, so similarly, we must have the same type of concern for all of Krishna's representatives, which means all the devotees, all the Vaishnavas. We must see them all as representatives of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us that you are all my representatives of my Guru Maharaj. How Prabhupada was worried about us, thinking about us. It was completely on the transcendental platform. And he wanted us to do the same thing for one another. To care about one another. To protect one another. To love one another. By doing this, Krishna will accept that love. Mad bhakta puja padika. Love my devotee, that's how you love me. Worship my devotee, that's how you worship me. The devotee is not Krishna. But every devotee is dear to Krishna. If you cannot show your love for the devotees, you cannot show your love for Krishna. And even if you try, Krishna will not accept it. If you don't care for the devotees, then your so-called care for Krishna has very little meaning to him. And to develop this spirit is really what is Krishna consciousness. And to develop this spirit is in a true sense the realization of Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya's order, Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamalayora Das Das Anudas, to be the servant of the servant of the servant. To be servant just doesn't mean just a formal position. It means to actually put your heart in your service. Nanda and Garga Muni and Vasudev, how much they put their heart into serving Krishna. Therefore, they personally were just very, very interested in his welfare in every regard. So to become servant of the servant of the servant means to have that same feeling of the welfare for all the servants of Krishna, according to our capacity. This is Krishna consciousness. Is there any questions? Ananda Vrindavan is always dependable to ask questions. You have to hear from the lips of the devotees. In Srila Prabhupada's purports, does he not explain exactly what it really is? And when the devotees on behalf of Srila Prabhupada are explaining, elaborating on these purports, how can you possibly think like that? Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said 95% of the advancement we make from reading his books are by reading the purports. In the translations, you could read, you could memorize, you could learn the stories, but you can't really grasp without the commentaries of the great souls. And therefore, all the Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, you'll never find them just translating. Within our line of parampara, whenever a great soul, an acharya, or a great scholar of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition translate, he always gives purports according to the time, the place, and the people of the particular area. He gives a purport to explain the real parampara significance of every verse. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a class from Bhagavad Gita, and he read a verse and he said, "My Guru Maharaj did not give a purport to this verse, so I will go on to the next verse." Huh? So you see, the devotees of the Lord, who are really compassionate, they know that the purport is the most important part. And really, why is the Srimad Bhagavatam class and the Bhagavad Gita class so important in our society? Because it is an elaboration on the purport. It is to study the purport and to elaborate upon the purport. Huh? And then we get the true meaning, the essential meaning. Without which, as you're saying, people read the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam and they just think that this is, of course, every father and mother are going to think like this. And when they read about the gopis, they're going to think, oh yes, every girlfriend is going to think like this. Hmm? Therefore, the great acharyas have warned us, without hearing, in that association, you're practically wasting your time. Hmm? And that is why within the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, we do not give much importance to Bhagavad Saptaha. Because how much can you really explain in 7 days the entire Bhagavatam? Hmm? People learn the stories nicely, but actually understanding the significance of the story and the significance of each verse of the story, which is essential, that does not take place. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he gave 7 days of Bhagavatam lectures at New Vrindavan in 1972. Every morning and every evening for several hours he spoke. But he spoke on one verse each session. He didn't go through one canto in each section. Huh? Because he wanted to show us that these things may be very nice and very entertaining, but if you really want to grasp, you have to dive deeply into the purports and the explanations of the great acharyas. Hmm? Any other questions? Yes? Just last year, in 1968, '68, '69, 26 Second Avenue was closed. They never owned it, they were renting it. And they moved to another place, I believe it was 71 Second Avenue, because it was bigger in size. So at that time, 26 Second Avenue was taken over by someone else and used as some sort of warehouse. And from this other place, they had two other places on Second Avenue, and then they moved to Brooklyn, Henry Street, which is a big, beautiful temple, which they had for many years. And then, according to Prabhupada's great dream, they brought a wonderful skyscraper in Manhattan. And Prabhupada liked it very much. But after he left, for some extraordinary reason, they sold that. And now they have another big, big temple in Brooklyn. So for all these years, 26 Second Avenue was just a warehouse, storage house, for some people. It was completely out of the hands of the Hare Krishna movement. But you can't buy it without buying the rest of the building. It's a big building, costing millions and millions of dollars. Huh? They just had all boxes just stored in there, and junk and dust, and I don't know if anybody ever went in there. Huh? It was like that for over 20 years. Huh? And then just about 2 years ago, some Karmi people rented it out and started a little store. And that was nice because it was the first time again devotees could go inside. Because for 20 years nobody could possibly go inside. It was all fenced off. It was a warehouse. It was just boxes and boxes. Nobody was ever there. It was locked. But last year, Hare Krishna movement actually got the lease for that place. And they made it into a Prabhupada museum. And just this last summer it was opened. I was there. Not for the opening, but I was there just before. It was very auspicious. But I personally do not agree with what they did. Because factually, there was never any renovation done to that place from the time Prabhupada was there. It was the same. Same wall, same floor, same ceiling, and therefore it was old because it was not taken care of. So what they did, instead of restoring it, which could have been done, they just put new walls, new ceiling, new floor, all modern, all real modern. They have one of those ceilings on a lower level, you know, with the, like tile ceilings.
With lower level, the fluorescent lights. They made the whole floor very white linoleum. And they all the walls, they put new walls on top of the old ones and painted them very nice. And now it looks like a very modern museum. It's Prabhupada's museum. And it's a very holy place. And now it's Prabhupada's museum. And the storefront next to that, they also got and made it into a restaurant, vegetarian restaurant. So next time you come to New York, we will take you there. Any other philosophical questions? Yes? You should follow the example of those people who really are inspiring you toward Krishna consciousness. You should not follow everyone. You should follow those who really are living according to very devotional principles and who are inspiring your heart. Those persons you should follow. Others you should pay all respects, and you should look for the good within everyone. Any fly could find a sore on a person's body, right? Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that a honeybee is always looking for the honey. No matter what the flower's condition is, does the honeybee care? Even if it's been trampled on, the flower, even if it's wilted, does it care? It goes right for the honey. And a fly, even if a person has a beautiful, wonderful, healthy body, if there's one sore where blood is coming, infection, he'll go right there and ignore the rest. Right?
Similarly, if there's a beautiful flower garden with all blossoming flowers, wonderful fragrances everywhere, birds singing, when a fly comes into the garden, what will he do? If there's a half square inch of stool on the ground, he'll only go there. He'll completely neglect and ignore acres and acres of beautiful flowers and birds singing, and he'll just suck that stool. And a honeybee, even if he's in the most terrible garbage dump, cesspool, if there's one flower with nectar in it, he'll go right there. A devotee is like a honeybee. An unfortunate person is like the fly. Any rascal can find faults. It takes a sincere and noble person to see virtues. A person who finds faults in others, you can understand that person's mind is a cesspool. That person is a fly. But a person who could see the good, even if there may be so many faults, a person who could see the good that's there, that person will, like a honeybee, he will attract the mind of Krishna. Seek and ye shall find. If you're looking for faults, you'll find faults. Everywhere and anywhere. If you're looking for the good, you'll find the good everywhere and anywhere. It's just a question of what you want. Krishna will reveal himself according to how you approach him. Shishupal only saw faults in Krishna. Whereas Arjuna, Yudhisthira, they only saw the glory of Krishna. Why? According to how they approached Krishna, they were seen. Krishna's in the heart of everyone. So finding faults with devotees is a disease. And it's a contagious disease. It's a sickening disease. And seeing the good and the virtues in devotees is an opulence. It's a benediction. So we should not be diseased. We should not spread disease. We should spread love and goodness. After all, we're all covered with millions of faults. If Krishna didn't see that little spark of goodness in us, he would never have given us the association of devotees by which we can develop. Right? When Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he was dealing with people who were addicted to eating meat from the day of their birth, who were addicted to illicit sex. In America, dating and all these things is just the natural process. They were addicted to gambling. They were addicted, like anything, to intoxication. They didn't even have the slightest sense of the four regulative principles. Many of them were atheists who had no belief in God. He was dealing with people like this. If he saw that one person was the slightest bit inclined to hear Bhagavad Gita or to chant the holy name, he would glorify that person. He would think this person is such a great soul. He wouldn't care about all the other things. He would only see that. He would instruct that person, you must give up, you must follow the four regulative principles. But that was his love to try to improve that person's spiritual life. But he wasn't seeing fault in him. If he would only see the fault, none of us would have become devotees. Right? You have so many faults. We all do. If the sadhus were to only see your faults, would you have ever had the chance to become a devotee? Because the sadhus see that little bit of goodness in you and try to fan that, therefore, But if you start finding faults in others, then Krishna is going to take away the privilege from you. He's going to take away the opportunity to make any spiritual advancement. Because what he's given, all he's overlooked for you, to help you become a devotee, if you're not willing to do that for others, he's going to withdraw his mercy. And therefore we find the number one reason for falling away from Krishna consciousness is criticizing devotees. A person who has this mentality generally cannot last very long. Because such disruptions increase the sweetness when it is revived. Huh? It's like in the Leela of Krishna, there is Sambhog and Vipralamba. Sambhog means when Krishna meets the gopis, Vipralamba when he's separated from the gopis. They are both essential for the rasa to be complete. Because when there is separation, it makes the meeting sweeter than ever before. Huh? If you're always with someone, there's happiness. But when you're away and there's a reunion with the object of your love, there's even greater happiness. Is there not? So separation makes the meeting more beautiful. And at the same time, without meeting, there's no meaning to separation. If you think that I'll never see him again, or I'll never be with him again, then that separation is hopeless. Huh? But if you know that the meeting will come, then the meeting makes the separation more beautiful, and the separation makes the meeting more beautiful. This is Sambhog and Vipralamba. Another definition of Madan Mohan is this is how Krishna relates with his devotees, through meeting and separation. So that disturbance, apparent disturbance, is not really a disturbance, but it's an enhancement. So Mother Yashoda is loving Krishna as an innocent child, but whenever they would see Krishna do some wonderful thing, they were so awestruck. But then when again they would just forget all these things and see Krishna in his beauty as their baby or their child, it would increase that parental affection, increase the quality. And also Krishna wanted to prove to the world, because so many notorious commentators consider that Krishna was an ordinary boy. Just the other night I was speaking to a very, very highly educated graduate of a big, big college, saying, "Why, Krishna, he was a politician. He was a human being like us. Why put so much emphasis?" Huh? So Krishna wanted to show that even as a tiny little baby, he's the Supreme Absolute Truth. He wanted to make this statement to the world by showing even in his little tiny baby form, he could contain all the universes within his mouth. And how this cause of all causes is behaving as such a helpless child for his mother, just to exchange love, that in and of itself completely melts the hearts and attracts the minds of all sincere souls.
So Krishna performs such leelas to attract the minds of all living beings.
If you are sincere, Krishna will direct you to someone who is sincere. But then after you're directed to someone who is sincere, you have to take guidance from him. You can't just be listening to everyone. If you do, that means you've become insincere. Huh? Is it your authority or someone else's authority? Your direct authority. It's just your unwillingness to surrender. That's all. What is better? Better is done when it's done with humility. You think the great acharyas have started this movement to create efficient materialists? You could go to so many training schools and colleges to learn how to be an efficient materialist. This movement is to teach people how to be surrendered, humble devotees. So whatever your authority is telling you, it is the best thing to teach you how to be a surrendered, humble devotee. It may not be the best thing to be an efficient materialist. So therefore, if you think you have a better way, it is your service to very humbly present your alternative. But then, whatever the decision is, you should accept and surrender. And understand that I may not understand this, but I'll become purified if I just surrender. And Krishna ultimately wants that. He doesn't want your efficiency. He wants your humble devotion. After that, are you doing it for Krishna or are you doing it for expediency? Efficiently means what Krishna wants. If he wants you to make a complete ass out of yourself inefficiently, then that's your service. Right? I mean, look at me. I'm just an illiterate fool sitting here giving Bhagavatam class to all these scholars and doctors and high-class people. Krishna's making a fool out of me, but if that's what he wants me to do, it's the order I'm supposed to do this, then let him make a fool out of me. I'm only trying to please him. Any other questions?
He's longing simply to serve Krishna, simply to please Krishna, simply to be whatever Krishna wants him to be. He's showing the attitude of ultimate surrender to the will of God, that I'm only meant for your pleasure. But then he also says, Yugayatam nimeshena chakshusha pravrishayatam shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. That feeling your absence a moment is appearing to be like 12 years or more, and tears are flowing from my eyes, and this whole world is nothing but a dreary void bereft of the sight of Govinda. So he is exhibiting the most intensified experiences of separation, and at the same time he's exhibiting the most intensified spirit of utter surrender to the will of the Lord. If you want to come before me, my Lord, come before me. If you want to break me brokenhearted by neglect, then make me brokenhearted by neglect. You have a right to deal with me in any way you please. This is total surrender to the feet of Krishna. Not like that. We don't make emphasis on a show of crying. He's speaking in terms of a state of ecstatic love. He's praying to Krishna. He's not simply talking about trying to attract cheap followers. This is a direct prayer to Krishna himself. He's talking about not just tears from the eyes, he's talking about tears of love coming from the core of the heart, from the very soul. That type of crying, we're supposed to learn to cry for Krishna like that. But even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in most cases, when he would exhibit his ecstatic symptoms, when common people were present, he would become very equipoised and restrain them. He would only at Srivas Thakur's house would he really exhibit these ecstatic symptoms. And there were only the highest, most purified Vaishnavas who could understand the true significance. He wouldn't amongst neophyte devotees, or even Raganuga Bhaktis, only amongst those who have attained the highest states of prema would he exhibit. And he wouldn't exhibit for their pleasure, he would exhibit because he would just allow himself to just completely uncontrolled in his love of, in his ecstasies of love. But to the common people, he would become very composed to not mislead them. But it should always be our prayer to learn to cry for Krishna. But not the tears of the eyes, the tears of the heart. Because any actor can make tears come from their eyes. If your mother dies, tears come from your eyes. Is that a transcendental ecstasy? Just out of sentiment. If somebody crashes into your car, tears will flow from your eyes, right? So many sentimental reasons we can cause tears to come from our eyes. But are those tears really exhibitions of ecstatic love? It is the tears of our heart that a devotee is praying to shed for Krishna upon chanting his name. Hmm?
And we understand the only person who could really shed those tears of love from the heart is one who is the most humble, loving servant of the Lord. As long as there's egoism in our heart, as long as there's material attachments in our heart, then whatever tears are falling from our eyes are superficial. So therefore, rather than when we're looking at another devotee, rather than looking at tears in his eyes, we should look for the humility of his heart. And even if there's no tears, you can understand there are tears inside. He must be crying for Krishna, such a humble soul. And maybe they will come out through the eyes, maybe they will not. But otherwise any people could put on dramatic performances. That we are not attracted to. And for this reason we need the association of Gurudev and the Vaishnavas of our line, of our sampradaya, to teach us what is true and what is not true. What is good for us and what is not good for us. That is very important. But in our own life, we should be calling out for Krishna, that when will that day be mine, when those tears of love will spring from the core of my heart upon chanting your name. And then let them fall from my eyes if you so desire, my Lord. But let them be tears of love. Yes, that is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he is revealing the highest realizations of love of God to everyone, but he is teaching a method of how to approach it, which is not cheap. Shukadev Goswami did not speak, because if he would have spoken, he would have gone into trance. And therefore, he did not want to make a cheap exhibition of trance in front of so many sages who would not understand it. So he purposely avoided talking about this. Similarly, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, oftentimes he would very much avoid talking about the love affairs of Radha and Krishna, because sometimes when he would do, he would become very much in trance, and he didn't want to display such symptoms to people in general. He would mislead them. He was very sober. One time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was in an assembly of learned scholars and Vaishnavas and Brahmins and people of other sampradayas. And he was on, just like at that AIDS conference, there was a table and everybody, all the main speakers were sitting. He was one of the main speakers. He was sitting, and there was hundreds and hundreds of people in the audience. And he had no intention of speaking of the glories of Radha and Krishna to such people. He wanted to speak of the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. But what happened is, one of the persons on the desk started blaspheming Sri Radharani, saying terrible things about her. So he could not contain himself. He stood up and he started to glorify Sri Radharani and explain her real position. And of course he completely defeated that person, and he established the truth of Sri Radharani. But as he was describing her, just tears, it wasn't just tears, he just fell unconscious. He just fell to the ground unconscious in the ecstasy of love. And then he told his devotees later that they could see, obviously, he was in just complete trance. He told his devotees later that I did not want to speak in these ways, but I was forced to. but we should never show these types of symptoms to the people in general, or even to neophyte devotees, because it will only mislead them. What was your question? Why are we discussing? Because we are discussing according to the parampara. We are not taking it cheaply. We are following Vaidhi Bhakti. We are following, while we are discussing it, we are following the strict rules and regulations of disciplined sadhana bhakti. If we disregard the strict rules and regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti and we directly start talking about the Radha Krishna love affairs, this is not at all authorized. It spoils everything. This is a great fashion here in India. Unless one is very specifically trained by a spiritual master and disciplined by a spiritual master according to the instructions of Rupa Goswami, then to talk about the love affairs of Radha and Krishna will simply be something very cheap and misleading. But because we are sincerely following these principles, therefore, when we speak about the love affairs of Radha and Krishna, we do not ever go into details too much, but when we do speak in this regard, there is a proper understanding. There is a proper conception of the approach. It is not taken cheaply. If we hear these pastimes according to a life of these principles, then hearing these pastimes will purify our heart. But if we hear these pastimes without, they will only mislead us. It's like Srila Prabhupada, when devotees were just in this gopi bhava, thinking that we'll only just meditate on the lila of Radha and Krishna and the gopis from the Antya Lila and meditate on these pastimes. They were influenced by other sadhus. Prabhupada knew that. Prabhupada was so angry. More than anyone had ever seen him, he was so angry. This is the poison that will ruin this movement. And the devotee said, but by hearing Radha and Krishna's pastimes and meditating on them, we will become purified. Prabhupada said, you will become putrefied. You must follow the authorized process. There are certain classes, they say, oh, you're talking Bhagavad Gita? This is for beginners. This is for fundamentalists. We're talking the highest. It's poison. We talk about Radha and Krishna sometimes, but the emphasis, even when we're talking that, is in the basic principles of the Gita. If you hear from someone who is teaching in that way, then it is proper. Because after all, Raganuga Bhakti begins after liberation from all material desires. Until that point, you have to accept Bhagavad Gita and the fundamental principles of Krishna consciousness and discipline and austerity and obedience. So if you are taught in that mood, then the pastimes of Radha and Krishna will be very purifying to your heart. Yes. You can hear the lila of Radha and Krishna, but unless you first understand how to serve the devotees, it will not go to your heart. It will only be a superficial process of listening. Therefore, we must learn how to be proper servants. And if we learn how to be proper servants and chant the name of God in that mood, then everything else will come. We don't have to be jumping ahead. Everything else will come naturally by the grace of Radha and Krishna. Half the Maha Mantra is the name of Radha. We're chanting Radharani's name hours every day. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But we are being taught how to approach Radha and Krishna in a proper service spirit. We're being trained how to approach the name of Radha and Krishna.
Hare Krishna.